Today's daf is Rav Zion. We are on Chavav Amid Aleph. Lost the daf as a result of Tisha B'Av, so we have what to make up. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. We learned with Zechon Nishmas Lo Lupin Zaltzman. We started the fourth parak of the Masechta yesterday, and the fourth parak deals with Shul. The first figure that we're going to be covering, started yesterday, and we're going to be covering over the course of today, is Kedusha, the sanctity that lies in a Shul, the sanctity that lies in a Sefer Torah. The basic point that we discovered in the Mishnah is that you malam b'kosh v'lo marid, and you have to go up in kedusha and cannot go down in kedusha. So, for example, if you sell a sefer Torah, so the Mishnah says you can't buy anything with lesser kedusha, which is everything. Meaning the sefer Torah has the utmost kedusha, and therefore you cannot buy sfarim or mitpichos or manto for the sefer Torah or anything with lesser kedusha. However, if you sell something with lesser kedusha, you could buy something with higher kedusha. That's the basic point in the Mishnah. We saw Rashi back in the Mishnah. Rashi gave us a couple of sources for this rule of Malam B'Kosh V'lo Maridin. Okay, that's been the topic of our discussion. Mamad Ha'ir, sorry, the Rehov Ha'ir, the center of the city, town center. So does that have Kedusha? So occasionally they daven in the town center. Right, the Gemara says that on Tanis, on a fast day, they daven in the town center. Mamados. No, I was right the first time. Tanis, on a fast day, they dive in the town center. We learned that back in Masechta Tanis. Mamados as well, maybe. Rashi gave us two positions on that. But anyway, basically, if I dive in a place temporarily, right, fast days. So the center of the city is used for a shul. Does that have Kedusha? So as we learned yesterday, that was a machlokes between the Tanakama of... That was the machlokes between our Mishnah and that of the position of the Chachamim. Our Mishnah takes the position that it does have Kedusha, that our Mishnah espouses the viewpoint of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Menachem, but the Gemara points out that that's the other way around. Rabbi Menachem bar Yossi says that it does have Kedusha, but the Chachamim say it does not have Kedusha. Okay. We are continuing in the Gemara. We're right in the middle of Chavav Amid Aleph. And let us take up where we left off yesterday. Basically, this is Lochin Teva. Okay, let's start the two dots on Chavav Amid Aleph. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonasan, Lo Shanu Ela Beis HaKnesses Shel Kfarim. This is true if it's a shul of Kfarim, Ela Beis HaKnesses Shel Kfarim, Kevin Dema'ama Also Lei, Lamatzi Mezavne Lei, Dehavle Derabim. Okay, but if the shul, but the public shul cannot be sold. Meaning our Mishnah is talking about the sale of the shul. So obviously our Mishnah is working with the assumption that you're allowed to sell a shul. That's our Mishnah. But the Gemara points out, however, that that is only limited to a shul that is owned by a small group of people. But if you have a shul of a metropolis, a shul of a city, so then you cannot sell it, period. And it's the reason why is because the Havale Derabim, it's a public shul. Now, as I pointed out yesterday, Tosus gave us two explanations of this Gemara in terms of what exactly this means it's a public shul. The first explanation of Tosus is just that when it was built for the public, meaning it wasn't publicly funded. You had some private funders for the shul, but it means simply that because it's a metropolis, we know people are going to be coming in and out of the city from all parts of the earth, so therefore it was built for the public. That's one explanation of Tosus. Another explanation of Tosus is that, no, it's actually publicly funded. A publicly funded shul cannot be sold because the funds for the shul were provided by the public, and therefore the owners of the shul are the public, and you can't sell it. And then, Lu Yitzu, if it's possible to get everyone's agreement, then I guess you could. But in other words, that's the second shot within Tosfos. Said it was publicly funded. So continuing the Gemara, Amar Rav Ashi, Habe Kanish the Mas Mechasa, Fagav the Mamaso La, Kevin Da Daiti Didi Kasu Ibanim Mezavnin Alei. So again, the Gemara quotes Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says there's a Shul Mas Mechasa. Now the Shul Mas Mechasa, is a big town, it's a big city, and generally you would say that the shul there cannot be sold, but this shul can be sold. Why? Because they're all coming as a result of me. Right? Again, the Adaita Didi Kasu, they're coming as a result of me. Now, exactly what that means, so again, we go back to the Tosos. So Tosos says, again, shot number one is that it's privately funded, but even when it's privately funded, and even though it's privately funded for a city, but still, since it's understood that really the shul centers around me, I understand it, it's a it begs the question of humility. But since the shul was built around me, circulated around me, so therefore I have the right to sell it. Or Tosa says the other way to understand the Gemara is that no, it's publicly funded. But since the public funds that were coming in understood that they're not just contributing to a shul, but they're contributing to my shul, so therefore it's understood that that I have the right to sell it. In other words, all that money is really earmarked not just for a shul, but a shul under my auspices, which I am therefore entitled to sell. Okay. The Gemara challenges based on a brisa. The brisa says that there was a shul privately funded. It was put together by a bunch of coppersmiths, and it was in Yerushalayim, and Machula Rabbi Eliezer, and they sold the shul to Rabbi Eliezer. And after selling the shul, they did with it whatever they wanted. So anyway, so what do you see over here? It's a shul in Yerushalayim, and it was sold. So the Gemara asked now the obvious question. We're talking about a city, a shul in Yerushalayim. It's being sold. So the Gemara says that's a small shul. The Inu Avdua, they were the ones who made it. Now again, according to the second shot of Tosos, I totally understand the Gemara's answer, meaning it's privately funded. Meaning a publicly funded shul cannot be sold. This shul is privately funded. That would be according to the second shot of Tosos. According to the first shot of Tosos, the Gemara over here is a little bit more difficult to understand because the assumption over here is that there's no difference between a private and publicly funded shul. The only difference is when building a shul, is the expectation that everyone's going to come to it? If so, you can't sell it. If there's no expectation that everyone's going to come to it, therefore you can't sell it. I guess what you have to say then in this particular case is that because it was a small shul, even though it was built in a big city, but because it was such a small shul, so therefore there was no expectation that everyone's going to come to it. Okay. Meisvei. The Gemara is going to challenge this again. Yerushalayim is not subject to Tumas Negayim. That means any house in Yerushalayim, even if you see evidence of Tzaras on the house, remember houses can afflict either a body, your clothing, or your house. If you actually see Tzaras on the house in Yerushalayim, ignore it. It does not have status of Tzaras. I'm Rav Yehuda, ani lo shamati l'makom mikdash bavad. Rav Yehuda says, no, not all of Yerushalayim, only the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, now what do you see from this, from these two positions? Abat HaKinesis, Abat HaMidrashos, Mitamim. What you see is that only the Beis HaMikdash is not subject to Tzaras. But if you see Tzaras in a shul, it would be subject to the status of Tzaras. So the Gemara says it's hard to understand, meaning that it's a, again, we're talking about the city of Yerushalayim. The city of Yerushalayim is a metropolis, it's a big city. So once you have a shul in Yerushalayim, so therefore it should be a public venue, and therefore should not be subject to Saras. Saras is only afflicting houses which are privately owned. So basically what the Gemara is wondering now is, how could we limit the exemption of Saras only to the Beis HaMikdash, where it should be that the exemption of Tzaras should apply to any shul in Yerushalayim, considering the fact that it's a public institution. So Ema, so the Gemara says, Amai hadekrachem havu, Ema, I'm Rav Yehuda, ani lo shamati ala makom mikudash belvad. So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to amend the statement to Rav Yehuda. Instead of saying the word mikdash, we're going to say mikudash. Any sanctified place in Yerushalayim, meaning, simply, any shul in Yerushalayim is going to be exempt from Tzaras. So basically now that we're saying that, so now we're fine. Meaning again, the two positions recorded in the Brice is that according to the Tanakhama, the entire city of Yerushalayim is exempt from any Tzaras, and according to Rav Yehuda, shuls in Yerushalayim are exempt from Tzaras. Okay, good. And now the Gemara wants to know, well, before we get to the next point of the Gemara, and now it works out well, because it supports what we said previously, that anytime you have a shul in a big city, it's not a private institution, it's by definition a public institution. Again, according to Tosos, there's two ways to understand that. Either because when built, it's understood that we're building it for not just this city, but for the entire public, the entire Jewish public, and so therefore it's a public institution. Or, second Pshat Tosos is that, no, it's publicly funded. And because it's publicly funded, so therefore it's a public institution. And so therefore, the shuls in Yerushalayim, all by definition, are public institutions, and therefore going to be exempt from Tzaras. Okay, that's the opinion of Rav Yehuda, and so therefore we have been so far supportive of what we've been saying up until now. Bimai kamiflagi. Now the Gemara just simply says, look, as long as we're here, what's going on in this Braisa? We have a debate between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda in terms of whether the entire city of Yerushalayim is exempt from Tzaras or just the public institutions known as the Shuls. So Tanakam is Savalon Nischalk, Yerushalayim Shvatim, Rav Yehuda is Savalon Nischalk, Yerushalayim Shvatim. And we touch on a machlokas that we've seen time and again throughout Shas, and that is, was Yerushalayim distributed amongst the Shvatim, yes or no? And this is a debate that takes place amongst the Tanayim. So Uvaplukta Dahani Tanay Detanya. And the Gemara notes that you're going to see this machlokas manifest itself a couple of times. Ma'aya b'chalko sh'Yehuda. So for example, the Gemara in Zvachim. The Gemara in Zvachim discusses how Yerushalayim could draw a line from north down to south, right through the center of the area of the Beis HaMikdash, and basically to the right of it, to the east of it, is going to be the Chalik of Yehuda, and to the left of it, to the west of that line, is going to be the Chalik of Binyamin. Binyamin is basically going to get, if you take a look at the Beis HaMikdash over there, Binyamin's going to, now that's upside down, so over there, east and west are in the opposite directions. But if you look over there, we've done this already before, you draw a line right to the right side of the Mizbeach, and it actually cuts into the Mizbeach, and therefore anything to the left of that line is going to belong to Binyamin, and anything to the right is going to belong to Yehuda. So, and here the Braisa spells it out. Maya b'chokosho Yehuda, Rabbis, Alishkos, Vazaros. So the that which is belongs to Yehuda, Harabayas, Lishkos, Vazaros, and basically anything to the right of the line. Maya b'chokosho Binyamin, And that which belongs to Binyamin, Ulam, Heichal, Beis Kodshe HaKadoshim. So Binyamin has, right, the primary components of the Beis HaMikdash. The antechamber, the Heichal is the actual edifice itself, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Uritzu Haisa Yotze Mechalkush Yehuda Menechnas Bechalkush Binyamin. There is one strip of land, of property, that belongs to Yehuda that encroaches into the property of Binyamin. As I told you, the line basically goes just east of the Mizbeach, but cuts in a little bit right on the south side of the Mizbeach. Uba Mizbeach Banui. And it's on this strip that the Mizbeach is built. And Binyamin was, he was worried about it. Meaning Binyamin wanted to house all of the edifice of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning the actual building, the Beis HaMikdash, and the Mizbeach as well. So, Bechol Yom Levola'ah, he wanted literally to swallow it, meaning he wanted to be the property on which the Beis HaMikdash is on. She'nemer Chofev Olav Kol Hayom, the Gemara quotes the pasuk from the Zos HaBracha, where it describes Binyamin as scratching his head. What do you mean, scratching his head? Nervousness, stress, because Binyamin wanted to make sure that he would be the host of the Beis HaMikdash. And the stress was rewarded because he stressed and he wanted the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore he got it all. And by the way, Rashi points out over here, we've said this also back in Zvachim, if you look carefully at the Mizbeach over there, you will note that on the east and south side of the Mizbeach there's no Yesod. The foundation does not go totally around the Mizbeach, but the foundation, the Yesod, only covers the north and west side of the Mizbeach, not the south and the east side. Why not? Because that is exactly where the line is drawn that separates the Chalik of Yehuda and the Chalik of Binyamin, and therefore, because Binyamin wanted the totality of the Mizbeach, so therefore the foundation, had it been extended, would have encroached onto the property of Yehuda, so therefore no foundation, no Yesod on that area. Okay, so therefore, what do we see so far? We have seen one Braisa that says that Yerushalayim is divided between Sheva Binyamin and Sheva Yehuda. Okay, next. Let's see now a Braisa that disagrees. And let's see a Braisa that says that Yerushalayim was not divided amongst the tribes. Because they maskirim batim Yerushalayim im neshen and shalahem. And based on the following Braisa, the Braisa says, if you own property in Yerushalayim, you have no right to rent it out, because you're not the owner. Now, I don't know, the tricky part of this discussion is, I don't know how you became... Right. How did you get that house? How did you get that apartment? How did you get that hotel? I'm not that part. I'm not clear about. That's a tricky one. But assuming that you have a property in Yerushalayim, you can't rent it out because by renting it out, that would indicate you're the owner. You're not. You're the guardian. You're the steward of the house, but you're not the owner of the house. So and so therefore, someone comes to your shalim and says, "Look, it's not a question of can I stay here. It's I'm staying here, right? That room is mine." So Rabbi Lazar Omer Aflomitos. Not only can the owner not rent out the actual property, he can't even rent beds. Now, beds you can argue is metalton, that's movable items. Meaning, I understand the house, I'm not the owner, I'm just the steward of the house. I'm not renting you the house, but what would you like to sleep on? Floor? Oh, enjoy. Oh, you want a bed? So I'll rent you the bed. According to Rabbi Lezer, you can't even rent that as well. Leficha choros kachem bali ushpizenot lenosam bizroa. And what do the homeowners, quote unquote, what do they do? So as the tenant stays there for a night, for two nights, what they do is they take the hides of the kachim. Meaning we know that when you have a karban, so if it's a shlamim, you'll get to eat meat. If it's an ola, you get to eat nothing. But in both scenarios, it's still going to be the hide. Now it happens to be the hide of an ola goes to the kohen, the hide of a shlamim goes to the owner. But anyway, but the point being, that you, there is hides to talk about. What the homeowners, quote unquote, did is they said, "Listen, in lieu of payment, we'll take that hide. Thank you very much." Now the Braisa notes they didn't have a right to do that, right? Not lenoso bezroa. They take it with force. They don't have a right to do that because it's not their home. They're not entitled to rent. They can't get any type of remuneration for the rental of the home because they can't rent it. But they took it. And they took it with force. Now, Abaye points out, what do we see from all this? Just as Derech Eretz, you're staying in a hotel, you're staying at somebody's house, you should leave something for the owner. Meaning, so I guess the Gemara over here means in addition to rent. I'm not totally sure, but in other words, leave a flask, leave a bed sheet. Meaning, leave something for the owner. Don't just simply go in and stay in, and then just leave. I think the Gemara over here means in addition to rent. I think so. Meaning, the Gemara here is talking about Derech Eretz. Okay. Ad kan, so far, so good. So basically, what we have seen over here, this Bryce's position is clearly what? Yerushalayim was not separated amongst the Shvatim. If there was, then there would be a discussion of ownership and rental. The fact that this Braisa says that there is no ownership and there is no rental, so that means that Yerushalayim was not divided amongst the Shvatim. So what have we seen so far today? It's a machlokus, basic machlokus amongst the Tanaim, whether or not Yerushalayim was divided amongst the Shvatim or not divided amongst the Shvatim. And now we go back to the story of Tzaras. So is houses in Yerushalayim subject to Tzaras? That's also machlokus. If it's possible that these homes are privately owned, so then it's subject to Tzaras. If they're not privately owned, then it's not subject to Tzaras. Ad kan. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara. We are in the bottom of Chavav Amud Aleph. And that, no. Meaning, the Rambam's position is that it was divided amongst the Shvatim. You know, the split between Yehuda and Binyamin. I'm sorry. No. I take it back. Right? Not divided. Right, and then okay. Right, so not subject to Tzaras. I mean, that's the Rambam's psak. Okay. Bottom of Chavav Amud Aleph Amar Rav Lo Shana Wala Shalom Achru Shiva Tuva Ir Bama Amar Anche Ir. Ava Machru Shiva Tuva Ir Bama Amar Anche Ir. Okay, right, I'm not, just for us to think about it. Meaning, a shul nowadays, right, usually a non-profit institution, which means, of course, that there is no owner to the shul, but the shul is run by board. Okay? Board of directors is running the shul. It's kind of like that. Not exactly. I'm taking a modern-day governance system and I'm trying to apply it to the time of the Gemara. I'm sure there are differences. I'm sure it's not legally the same type of entity. But, okay, just to give us an idea of what we're talking about. The Shiva Tuvei Ir, basically the seven members of the council. Okay, so basically the governance of a city was operated with some sort of council, and the assumption is it's made up of seven people. Okay, I don't know why. I'm sure there's a good explanation. But basically it's the city council. If the city council were to agree to sell a shul, so then you are entitled to share it, entitled to sell it. So the take a look at Rashi over here. Ela shalom machru hatovim bereshut ha'am. Avali machru paka kedusha min ha'chefetz u'min ha'damim u'mutal ha'sens ha'mayim kol ratzonam. Once you have city council agreeing to sell the shul, so that's it. Meaning the shul becomes totally deconsecrated. Rashi writes that what you could do is that you could use the shul for whatever purpose you want. You could use the proceeds of the sale for whatever purpose you want. Meaning that according to Rava, a shul under the auspices and under the sale of the city council can be totally deconsecrated. Even if you want to, now I thought the pshat in the Gemara is even if you want to convert it to a bar. That's I'd like to think that that's not the way Rashi presents it. You take a look at Rashi, the top Rashi, in Chavav HaManav, Rashi writes, Liknos b'damim lasso shecha lishtos. What you can do with the proceeds of the sale is you can buy a round of drinks for everyone in the city. Okay, that's that. Rashi over here says that we're talking about the proceed of the sale, not the actual building itself. Either way, I don't think my point is being negated. Either way, you could deconsecrate the shul. Ravina avalei autila debei kenishta. Ravina had a mound of a shul, meaning there was once upon a time a shul there, but basically the shul went into such decay and such disuse that basically it kind of caved in, and what's left is a mound. He says, okay, look, basically now it's not a shul anymore. It's a mound. Can I plant on it? So go to the city council. City council who was properly elected, if you will. Again, I'm not totally following how this governance works, but if you have the city council and they sell it, so then they can totally deconsecrate the property. Vizara, and then you will have total rights to do whatever you want. That property, you can plant on that property.
So the seven number, they have to be seven trustees, otherwise they're not
acceptable? Sounds that way. I don't know any better. I'm just, you know, I'm repeating what the Gemara is saying. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Very good point, Danny. Right, excellent point. Meaning that what's clear from this discussion over here is that the shul is not Tashmisha Kedusha. The Rishonim have this discussion. Right, what exactly the status of the shul is? Right, you already know the Gemara coming up, but you're correct. In other words, the way to view a shul under these circumstances is tashmish mitzvah, meaning that it's not intrinsically holy, but the usage of it is holy, and therefore, if the seven council members can deconsecrate the shul, if they decide to, they can deconsecrate the shul. Rami bar Abba have a kabane be kenishta hava. Hayi kenishta atika hava by lemistre ulasu livne kishuri mine viyula laasam. So the Gemara tells a story where basically there was a amora, Rami bar Abba. He built a shul. He had he had an old shul, and it was dilapidated. And what he wanted to do is take it down and build a new shul. Recycle some of the material of the old shul in order to build the new shul. Yes or no? So Yosef kami by lehadra of chista amar of chista. So the Gemara says, well, what was on his mind, what was weighing on his mind was a statement by Rav Chista, which was, Lo lister be'kenishta, adabani be'kenishta achrita. You can't deconstruct an old shul until you build a new shul. So, and the reason why, the Gemara spells out right away. Hasa mishum shiuta. So, and the reason why is because of negligence. Because, right, you had enough experience with construction in life, you know. Sometimes the plans are to build, right, and it happens all the time, happens everywhere. The plans are to build, and life happens, and the building doesn't go up. So what's going to end up happening is that I know we have an old shul, and I know it's dilapidated, and we're going to tear it down, and we're going to build a new shul. It's in the plans. Good, it's in the plans. But that doesn't mean it's going to happen. So maybe the concern would be, not maybe, Rav Chista's concern is, I can't take down an old shul until I already have the new shul up. Okay, that's a rule of Rav Chista. So now the Gemara says, so right to however you want to call it, Gzeirah d'Rabbanan, right? Not exactly clear how to formulate it, but that's a halacha. So the Gemara says, but over here, ki I gav damai. But over here, I'm going to make an argument that not a worry, all right? Don't worry, because I'm going to take the material of the old shul in order to build the new shul. It's not just that they're two separate entities. That's going to be recycled into this. So maybe my case is different. Also, So he goes to Rav Papa, he goes to Rav Huna, and they both say, no, no, you can't do that. Meaning Rav Chista's rule is, the new shul has to already be up in order to tear down the old shul. It's interesting. He goes to Rav Papa and he goes to Rav Huna, meaning what was he doing? He was shopping around, right? He was going from an Amora to an Amora to see if maybe there was a, you know, second opinion.
Okay. The real estate place.
Okay, good. Good question. I don't know the answer, but in this particular scenario, the Amoraim said no. When it comes to a shul, if we do an exchange or if we do a sale, so then it's permitted, right? Like we just described earlier, meaning under the assumption that you have the seven council members selling the shul or making an exchange for the shul, so then the original shul that was sold loses all of its kedusha. But uguri mashkuna, however, if the shul is loaned out or if it's mortgaged, right? There was a loan and the lender is saying, okay, no, it's time to pay up, and we don't have the money, so what do? Okay, so we use the shul as a security against the loan. Okay, we'll mortgage the shul. So then the shul does not lose its kedusha, meaning that there has to be a complete transaction, either a sale or an exchange. But if the shul is just lent out, or if the shul is mortgaged, so that's not a complete transaction, and so therefore the shul still has kedusha. My tamei b'kedusha so kain. Livni nami. And we'll say the same thing regarding the bricks as well. Chalafin of zavni ushari. If I sell or exchange the bricks, so then yes, then the bricks lose all of its kedusha. You can do whatever you want with the bricks. But uzvino aser. But if you're just lending the bricks out, I don't know why you would do that. But if you're lending the bricks out, so then no. So hani mi libati kasa ava becharet alesan ba. Now all this is true only if at one point in time the shul was used. But let's say you build an edifice, you plan it to be a shul, but you never use it. So the Gemara says that, look, there's an issue, there's an overarching issue that comes up again and again throughout the Gemara, and that is hazmana. Hazmana basically means dedication. If I dedicate something, for example, let's say we have tachrichin, right? We already sew up clothing for the dead, right? Tachrichin. So anything that is going to be used for the mace is aster b'nai, you're not allowed to get benefit from it. So you have tachrichin, you're not allowed to get benefit from it. So once you just dedicate it as tachrichin, it's already aster b'nai. So the Gemara over here says, can we not make the same argument for the bricks? Meaning if we dedicate the bricks for a shul, even if we never used it, it should have kedusha. The Gemara says it's not the same. It is more comparable, the bricks are more comparable to tavui la'arig. Meaning, what if we spin thread planning it to use for tachrichin? Even if we dedicated it, that's not enough. We're still too far away from the finished product. You have to be at the point of finished product and dedication, then it gets the kedusha, even if it has not been used yet. But dedication only imbues something with sanctity only if you're at the point of finished product, like the tachrichin are stitched together, like the actual edifice is built. But if all you have is just bricks, all you have is just stitching and string, so that's not that does not get any status, even with hazmana. Matana. What if you gift a shul? Meaning, so far, what have we discussed? The sale of a shul, the exchange of a shul for another shul, or for anything, in exchange, where there was a full transaction, and again, done under the council member, the shul loses the sanctity. We talked about the lending of a shul, that it does not lose its sanctity. What about a gift? What if we gift the building? Okay, interesting. So, pligi bar Ravach, Ravina Chadasa, Vachad Shari. So the Gemara says machlokes amongst the Amoraim. So manda asa b'hai hafka kedusha b'mai tifaka kedusha so. Now the one says that does not lose its kedusha because look, it's a gift. It's not a transaction. Meaning there was no exchange. Nothing came in place of the shul. So how did the shul lose its kedusha? Meaning if there was money transferred for the shul, so good. So right, you see the transaction. If there was an exchange for other items, so good. But what's matana? And matana, I understand, a matana is a transaction. But what came in exchange for it? Nothing. The kedusha didn't go anywhere. Oman deshari lav dehava lehana minei lehava. Right, correct, correct. There is a kinyan, but for kedusha to go away, it has to transfer to something. Over here,
kinyan to transfer, no.
Understood, but we're talking not just about the sale of an item or the transference of an item. We're talking about the kedusha. The argument and the counter argument is ilav dehavale hanami nelohavi yayivle, and the Gemara says that there is a benefit, there is a transaction and a gift, meaning basically, I think we can all relate, right? When you give a gift, so again, there's some of us are really altruistic, okay, which is beautiful, and really are expecting nothing for the gift. Good. There are those of us like that. And then there's the rest of us. And for the rest of us, when you give a gift, there's an understanding that, yeah, I'm going to give a gift, but, you know, there will be something coming back in my direction. Right? There's going to be some sort of reciprocity in the gift. And so what the Gemara is basically saying is that when there's a gifting of a shul, there is a benefit. It may not be a tangible benefit immediately at that point in time, but there is some benefit, you know, for some future consideration. And so therefore, the Kedusha does get, the Kedusha does go away. It is viewed as a transaction. And then the Gemara comes to a conclusion in this matter, that if you gift a shul, again, we're talking about the council member, gifting a shul to somebody, it is viewed as a sale, and therefore the Kedusha of the shul goes away. Tana Rabbana. Okay, we are in the middle of Chafav and Beis. Tashmishe mitzvah. We're up to now a basic Gemara that comes up here in this fourth paragraph of the Megillah. It is fundamental and basically talks about how to treat items after the item has been used. So tashmishe mitzvah nizrakin. So if it's something that was used for a mitzvah, you could throw it away. Okay, we'll give examples in just a moment. But like a lulav, the rabbi spoke about it last night. Minchah Maariv, a lulav. So you have a lulav. What do you do after Sukkot is over? Throw the lulav away. Okay, we should be respectful when we throw it away. You shouldn't just simply throw it in the garbage, wrap it up, and then throw it in the garbage. But when all said and done, you can throw it away. Tashmishe kedusha nignazin. But if it's tashmishe kedusha, if it's something with intrinsic sanctity, and through the examples you see exactly what we mean, so then it cannot be thrown away, but rather nignaz. It's got to be put away in geniza. Meaning stored away. But you can't just simply dispose of it. Ve'ela and Tashmish Mitzvah, examples of Tashmish Mitzvah are Sukkah, Lulav, Shofar, Tzitzis. Okay, some basic mitzvahs that say positive commandments. So your Sukkah, after you take down your Sukkah, what can you do with the wood? You can throw it away. It's fine. And the same thing is true with Lulav, Shofar, Tzitzis. Ve'ela and Tashmish Kedusha, but something which is Tashmish Kedusha, uses for Kedusha, Deluska Misfarim, Tfilin Umezuzos. Huh?
Why is the seed and tefillin are the same? I mean, the seed and tefillin, why is the seed tashmishe mitzvah?
I'll explain. So the deluska misfarim tefillin mezuzas, a sack that's used for your tefillin, your mezuzah, your svarim over here, remember, svarim is any sefer of Tanakh. The tikshel sefer Torah, the nartikshel tefillin, a bag for a sefer Torah, a bag for tefillin. Right, tik nartik, Rashi says both of them are bags. Nartik is like the diminutive, right? Those of you who speak other languages, you know that, like in Spanish, for example, I'm sure the same thing in French also, like you can take any word and you can convert it into a diminutive. So here also, tik nartik are big bag and a smaller bag. Urtsua sehem, and also the straps of tefillin as well. Meaning, and now let's get to Hadi's issue. What's the difference? The difference is as follows. Anything that has psukim written on them, that's Kedusha. That's intrinsically sanctified. So if I have now a Sefer Torah, that's not Tashmisha Kedusha, that's Kedusha, meaning that has intrinsic Kedusha. Shem Hashem on it. Even just a Pasuk, meaning without Shem Hashem, but that's a Pasuk in the Torah. So and then, if I wrap it up in a bag, that bag now is considered Tashmisha Kedusha, and so therefore, cannot be thrown away, but rather into Geniza. Okay, oof. Excellent question. If time permits, I'll discuss that a little bit more. Right, but again, wait, hold on a second. Understand, we're talking about Tashmishe Kedusha, meaning Kedusha is an actual description of the cloth with the Sefer Torah written on it, with Psukim written on it. The Tashmishe Kedusha is anything that serves the cloth. So the gartel, the belt around the, oh, I understand, you don't have this. But in other words, but the case, right? The Aron.
Right.
Okay. Amar Rava. So now five statements by Rava. That basically anything which is directly serving a Sefer Torah or Tefillin or Mezuzah is going to have Kedusha, which requires Geniza. Anything which is not a primary service item, but a secondary service item, you'll see what I mean in just a moment, is not going to have such sanctity. So it has to be directly serving the Sefer Torah. So Amar Rava Merisha Vamina Hai Kursaya Tashmish Tashmishu. Kursaya is the secondary. Kursaya, look at Rashi over here. So Rashi says Kursaya is a bima. Right, the bima. Good, I have, over here in this room, I can actually point to what we're talking about. Okay, so the bima, right ahead of me, so that's Tashmish to Tashmishu. Vishari, and therefore permitted, meaning it doesn't have the status of Tashmish Kedusha. Came into Chazin, the Mosvi Yalavei Sefer Torah, Amina Tashmish Kedusha. But, as we all figured out pretty quickly, the Sefer Torah goes on it. Even hard to understand what his Havamina was. But the Sefer Torah goes directly on it, Tashmish, that it directly services and facilitates the Sefer Torah, and so therefore, Tashmish Kedusha, therefore cannot be disposed of. Has to be put into Geniza when we're finished with it. Amar Rav Amirish, the second statement of Rava. Amar Rav Amirish, Avamina Have Prise, Tashmish to Tashmishu. Now, Prise over here, Rashi Tosfos debate exactly what that is, but Prise, Rashi says, is the curtain that's on the inside of the Aron. Minhag Ashkenaz, you can look behind me for a good presentation. So Minhag Ashkenaz is to have the doors and to have the paroches in front of it, right? So Rashi over here is describing a curtain that's on the interior. All right. So anyway, so Tashmishu Tashmishu. So it's not directly servicing the Sefer Torah, and so therefore it's a secondary item, and therefore it does not have kedusha. But kevin de chazina de eifele umanche sifrei lavei, amina tashmish kedusha hu ve'aser. But then Rava says, but then I realize that's not always true. Sometimes they take the curtain that's inside, they roll it up, and they put the Sefer Torah directly on it. Therefore, it's tashmish kedusha. Third statement to Rava. Amar Rava hai tevu said the irpat me'avde teva zutrase shari. If I have an aron, it's falling apart. And what do? I basically take it apart. All the good pieces of wood I used to make a smaller aron, that you're allowed to do. So in other words, even though this new aron that I'm making is smaller, but still it's an aron. But kursaya aser, but if I want to make a bima out of it, that you can't do. That is a diminishment of kedusha. So I can't take an aron that's falling apart and use the wood, whatever wood is good, and use it to make a bima. That is a diminishment of kedusha. Fourth statement of Rava. Amar Rava, I pierced the bala lema'avde, pierced the sifre. Shari, if I have a mantle, right, some curtain that I wrap my Sefer Torah around, and again, it's coming apart, and so therefore I cut it out and use whatever left is that is good, so I could use it to cover smaller Sefer Torah, but not chumashim. Okay, let's not think in modern terms. A chumash over here is still a scroll. It just happens to be that not all five chumashim are written. It's only a fifth of the Torah. Meaning it's only Sefer Breishis. It's only Sefer Shmos. That has less Kedusha. And I can't take a mantle that served to wrap an entire Sefer Torah only to wrap a fifth of the Torah. Amar Rava Hani Zavile Duchamshe V'kamatre Desifre Tashmish Kedusha Ninu. Some bags that were some type of bag that's used for a chumash, and a bag that was used for Sarim, Tashmish Kedusha Ninu, V'nignazim, even though it doesn't serve an entire Sefer Torah, but still has Kedusha. I might have thought they're just there for protective purposes, and they're not L'Kavod, they're not to honor the Sefer Torah, Kamash Malan. The Gemara says, that's what you see over here. Okay, let's go on. There was a shul that was used by Roman Jews. Okay? It sounds like the shul's in Bavo. So, geographically, definitely difficult to understand how the Roman Jews made it all the way out to Bavo. Okay. And to have a pasuk lahu idrona to have a machis bames. And the Gemara over here tells an interesting story, strange story, where the shul opened up to another room, right? And there was a doorway separating these two rooms. And in this other room, there was a mace. There was a dead body over there. Now, what exactly the circumstances are, why wasn't the mace taken out to be buried at this moment, I don't know. But here's what they wanted to do. There was a group of Kohanim who wanted to daven in the shul. Problem is that this shul opened up to another room. There was a mace in the other room, and as we've seen again and again throughout Shas, Tumas Ohel travels from one room to another if the doorway is open. So Azu Amarle LeRava Amarlu Dalute Bosa Usve Da'Avale Kli Eitzah Sula Nachas. So Rava comes up now with a possible solution, and that is take the Aron, lift it up, and put it into the and put it right in the doorway, and that Aron will block the Tumah from coming. Now, can an Aron block the Tumah? So now I know it's a little bit strange. We're basically using the Aron as a means, basically as a vehicle, as a means of allowing the Kohanim to daven in this room. Okay, that in of itself is interesting, but right now let's just deal with the Tumah Tahara aspect of it, and that is, can the Tumah be actually blocked? The answer is depends. Not clear cut. If when I'm blocking the doorway is a kli, which it itself is mekabel Tumah, then it does not stop the Tumah from coming. If I'm blocking the Tumah with something which is not mekabel Tumah, so then it blocks the Tumah. So right now the argument is the Aron is not mekabel Tumah. It will kli eitz asui lanachas in a mekabel Tumah. V'chotzes b'fnei ha-tumah. And the argument is that the Aron, now the Aron is a kli eitz, right? It's a wooden utensil. But ha-asui lanachas, once the Aron is placed down, never do we ever suspect that we're going to pick the Aron up and move it around. And so therefore it has the status of not being mekabel Tumah, and therefore if we pick the Aron up and we put it over there, so then it's not only going to be mekabel Tumah, but stop the Tumah from coming in. So then they say to Rava, you know, sometimes we take the Aron and we use it as a bima. Now, with this Aron, it's kind of hard to envision. But I guess the Aron that we're describing is much shorter. And so occasionally what happens is that we don't have the Aron houses the Sefer Torah, and then sometimes we also pick it up and we move in order to use it as a bima as well. And so therefore it is basically a wooden box, if you will, that is moved, both when it's empty and when it's full. And so therefore, it's mekabel Tumah. Therefore, it won't prevent the Tumah from coming in. So yachilo afshar. So at which point, so Rebbe says, okay, if you're right, then I can't help you. There's no way to stop the Tumah from coming from that room to this room. And so therefore, the Kohanim cannot daven here temporarily. I have a cover that was used for a Sefer Torah. It got worn out. So what can we do with it? We could use it as tachrichen for a dead body. And that is, I'm sorry, specifically makes mitzvah. And that's geniza. And that qualifies as geniza. A Sefer Torah that's worn out. So you can bury it next to a Talmud Chacham. Now he doesn't have to be a super insightful Talmud Chacham. Could be just a very simple Talmud Chacham. He knows halachas. Right? He's what's called a Shona Halachas. Right? He learns Chai Adam, or now as I'm becoming more familiar, he's learning Yalkut Yosef, meaning he's, he doesn't have powerful analysis, but he knows Halachas. It's good. You can take a Sefer Torah and bury it right next to this Talmud Chacham. I'm Rav Acha bar Yaakov of the Kli Cheres. You must take the Sefer Torah and put it in a Kli Cheres, meaning you can't just simply leave the Sefer Torah naked, if you will, right alongside the Talmud Chacham, but it has to be placed in a Kli Cheres. Shenemar, Unasatim a Kli Cheres l'man yamdu yamim rabim, in order to slow down the decomposition of the Sefer Torah while it's in ground. Amar Rav Papi Mishmei de Rebbe. Converting a shul into a base medrash. Yes. Converting a base medrash into a shul, no. The Gemara is arguing right now that a base medrash has more kedusha than that of a shul. Rav Papa goes in the exact opposite direction. Rav Papa mishmei de Rav Masni Ipcha. Am Rav Acha Kavasi de Rav Papi Mistaber. We're on the top of Chosayna Mad Aleph. Rav Papi is more reasonable. Why? The Amar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi be based Knesses Motel Asos with base Medrash. Okay, Rav Yehoshua ben Levi says it, that you're allowed to convert a shul into a base medrash. Shema mina darsh bar kabar ma yachsev v'yisrof es beis Hashem es beis HaMelech v'es kol batei Yerushalayim v'es kol bayis gadol saraf be'esh. The end of Malachim Beis. I know we just finished Tisha B'Av. This is a description in Malachim Beis of the destruction of Bayis Rishon, the first temple. And the Gemara now is going to expound. Beis Hashem is the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMelech Ela Patarim Shel Melech. So what got destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzaradan? So, the Beis HaMikdash, the palaces. Beis Kol Batei Yerushalayim, houses in Yerushalayim, Kamashman. That's houses in Yerushalayim. Beis Kol Bayis Gadol, Saraf Beish. Now, what are the big houses that are being described over here in this pasuk? So, Rav Yochanan, Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Chanamar, Malkum, Shemegalim, Bo Torah, Chanamar, Malkum, Shemegalim, Bo Tefillah. It's either the Beis Medrash or the Shul. In terms of Torah, we have a pasuk that describes Torah and connects it to Gadol, Yagdil Torah. So you see the Bais Gadol is the Bais Medrash. Elisha, tell us about the great things, the Gadol that was done by Elisha. And Elisha, what was his modus operandi? Elisha David Birachmeu David. He davened, right? Excellent davener. The Gemara says, look, Rav Yeshua ben Levi is probably the one who says that we're talking about a base medrash, because I'm Rav Yeshua ben Levi, base Knesses, mutar asosa base medrash. Because Rav Yeshua ben Levi is the one who says that you're allowed to convert a shul into a base medrash. Base medrash has more kedusha than a shul. Shema mina. The Gemara says, fine. We can conclude in that matter. Continuing in the Gemara, v'amachru Torah lo yichu sfarim. Ibalu ma'u limkor sefer Torah yashan likochbo chadash. Okay, I told you this question was coming up yesterday. The lateral movement. Now, this is not exactly lateral, because we're going from an old Sefer Torah, and we want to know, can I sell it now to buy a new Sefer Torah? So it is a lateral movement, but it is an improvement, in that we're going to buy a new Sefer Torah. Kevin Delamala Le Aser, Oduma Kevin Delaika Lului, Lului, Achrina Shepardami. On one hand, we're not going up in Kedusha. On the other hand, we have nowhere else to go. We're talking about the sale of a Sefer Torah. So Tashma v'amachru Torah lo yichu tzfarim. Tzfarim hu delo ha-Torah b'Torah shabridami. So the Gemara says, what does the Mishnah say? That if I sell a Sefer Torah, I can't buy Nevi'im and Ketuvim. Makes it sound like you can buy another Sefer Torah. So masmisin di'avad kikam b'bay le'lechat z'chilot. The Gemara says, okay, I agree with you. B'di'avad. After the fact, you're right. I'm asking. I want to sell an old Sefer Torah to buy a new one. Lichatchila, am I allowed to do that? Tashma, golan Sefer Torah b'mitbachos chumashim, v'chumashim b'mitbachos neviim uksuvim, aval no neviim uksuvim b'mitbachos chumashim, v'lo chumashim b'mitbachos Sefer Torah. If I have a mantle, a cover that was used for a navi, so I can't use it to wrap up a chumash. If I have one used to wrap a chumash, again, chumash is just meaning a fifth of the Torah, I can't wrap a Sefer Torah with it. So Ketani Mies Golem Sefer Torah Ben Mitpachos Chumashim. Mitpachos Chumashim In Mitpachos Sefer Torah Lo. What does that mean? Again, it sounds like a lateral movement is no good. So Ema Sefer V'lo Chumashim In Mitpachos Sefer Torah HaTorah B'Torah Shaper Dami. The Gemara says, yeah, but if I read on in the Braisa, what do we say? That if I have a mantle that was used for a Chumash, I can't use it for a Sefer Torah. But if I have a mantle that was used for a Sefer Torah, I could use it for another Sefer Torah. So So the Gemara says, look, there's no diuk that we can make over here, because the diukim, I can make diukim in either direction. Okay, but still, agreed. But the Gemara still, the sale of a Sefer Torah. The Gemara right now is entertaining the idea. I just can't sell a Sefer Torah, even if I'm going to buy another Sefer Torah with it. So Tashma Menichin Sefer Torah Gabi Torah B'Torah Gabi Chumashim Chumashim Agabi Neviim Uksuvim. I could stack a Sefer Torah on top of a Chumash. I could stack a Chumash on top of a Navi. Avalo Neviim Uksuvim Agabi Chumashim Lo Chumashim Agabi Torah. Hanacha Kamar. So the Gemara says, okay, we're talking about stacking. Shani Hanacha Delo Asher Dilo Teima Hachi Mechrach Hechi Karchinan. Look, stacking. So the Gemara says, of course I can stack a Torah on top of another Torah. Think about it. When you roll a Torah. Now I know you, Sfardim, you don't understand what's about to happen right now. Huh? No, I understand that. But what the Gemara here is talking about is that when you're rolling a Sefer Torah, right? Assume now the Sefer Torah is not vertical, but assume it's horizontal. So essentially what's happening, so you're having one cloth resting on another cloth. Okay, now your Sefer Torah are always vertical, so you're good. Meaning you never...
No, but there's also one, but that also is one layer on top of the other.
It's one. Yeah, but it's not on another. It's next to, but never on. You never have this. Okay, good, but we have this. Meaning when we open up a Sefer Torah, right, and place it on the bima, so we're putting it down now horizontally, so it's one is on top of the other. Gemara says, and how can you do that? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how you could do that, because you have no other option. Meaning, what's your other option? Opening up the entire Sefer Torah, that's, you know, okay. V'haka yastiv dapa chaverta, ala kevin delo asher shari, hachanami kevin delo asher shari. So the Gemara... Yeah, correct. Correct, agreed. Right, we could do like you, and then we would never have this problem. Tashma da'amar rabba ba'bracham rav yochim mishum rishim and gamlil lo yimkar adam sefer Torah yashin likach bo chadash hasa mishum shiusa ki kamrin and kigon de ksiva manach lefruke mai. The Gemara says, look, again, the idea of I'm going to sell the old Sefer Torah and we'll figure out later on to buy a new Sefer Torah, the Gemara says, look, I understand. We discussed that earlier this morning. Shia. Meaning, okay, it may end up happening, I'm not going to buy the new Sefer Torah. Again, life happens. But here, I'm asking, I have a brand new Sefer Torah, all right, written. I commissioned somebody, I wrote it. And now what I want to do is, I want to exchange the old to buy a new that I already have written. So my Tashma, Dam Rav Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Ein Mochin Sefer Torah, Ela Lame Torah Velisa Isha. I can sell a Sefer Torah. I need the funds to get married. I need the funds in order to learn Torah, so I could sell a Sefer Torah for those purposes. Shmamina Torah b'Torah Shabidami. The Gemara now is thinking, oh good, so now I could sell a Sefer Torah to my another Sefer Torah. Meaning, can't be worse than getting married or learning Torah. So the Gemara says, Damashani limush, alimon maybe lide maisa. And Ishanami, lo Torah bara l'sheves yitzara. Gemara says, no. Learning Torah is paramount. Learning Torah, because if you learn Torah, then you're going to do mitzvos. Getting married is paramount. Lo Torah barali shevis yitzara. The primary purpose of creation is to progenate, and so getting married is critical. So for learning and for getting married, you can sell a Sefer Torah, but that doesn't mean that you can sell Sefer Torah to buy another Sefer Torah. Aval Torah b'Torah lo. Tana Rabbana. Let's say we no longer need the Sefer Torah. Baruch Hashem, we have enough Sefer Torah that we just don't need this one. Still, he cannot sell a Sefer Torah. If you have nothing to eat, and you either sell the Sefer Torah or your daughter, right? Torah allows for the sale of your daughter, but if you do so, Eino roa siman bracha la'olam. Right, there's not going to be any bracha. You have no bracha is going to be generated from such a sale. So, sounds like from the Gemara, I understand why you're doing it. It's still not a good idea.